From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. The new film, Destroyer, gives us a chance to get an astonishing new look at the actress Nicole Kidman. The team behind it is director Karan Kusama and writers Phil Hay and Matt Manfredi are here to talk about the film. Guys, first of all, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And when the recent discussion we had about the film, it really Destroyer almost can apply to your lead character's kind of bent for self-destruction in some ways, can't it?
Yeah, she's definitely the agent of her own trouble a lot of the time, which I think makes for really interesting characters.
We talked a lot about, and we talked with you about how that title kind of, it's gained all kinds of different meanings to us while making the movie, you know, and you know, Karan often talked about how in this movie, time is in a way the greatest destroyer, and what happens to people over time, especially if they're nurturing secrets, nurturing stuff that's eating them up, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we were saying this in this conversation we did last week for the film, and Matt, the idea that they're really, you guys either have a title going in or you don't have a title going in.
If we have a title going in or we go back and forth and bicker and English words just don't sound normal to us anymore. So if you just say destroyer like that, that just sounds like a funny word. I don't even know what that is. And we take a while. But Destroyer was one of those ones where, even though we came late to it, once Phil suggested it on this text thread we all had, we were all like, oh, yeah, that works.
The title text thread I was able to close out victoriously.
Stuck. Yeah.
But what I thought was, what I think is so interesting about the film is in a lot of ways it feels like a reaction to a genre film or a certain type of genre film where things are posited in almost a superficial kind of action way rather than having the action be visceral, which it really is in this film.
Mm-hmm. I think for us, as we've gotten older, though we totally appreciate all kinds of genre films and even classics, we're also really interested in this idea of consequence. You know, I don't think we can enter middle age without watching one more, you know, mirror of ourselves get the crap beaten out of them without consequence in a movie. And I just feel like there is something very powerful about seeing these characters really be put through the ringer and have a price to pay, that it wasn't simply business as usual in terms of the storytelling.
We wanted to tell a story about, it is really about consequences, the story, and our character, there's a lot of physical consequences to her journey, but more importantly, what we wanted to make is to show the emotional consequences of this particular story and of these kind of stories. You know, that sometimes the wreckage that's left behind and the consequence is what's left out of movies, and that's what we're interested in, actually.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was saying the character is what when we hit upon the character, that's what really drove the rest of it, and we got like made us understand why we were telling this story. So while it does have these trappings of a LA cop story, and then we love those kind of stories, for us it was always a character study.
Because one of the things I said to you when we were talking about this before is that it really is about every act of violence has a consequence, and your protagonist suffers, like I'd said to you guys before, that there's a piece of her left in basically every alley and hallway in the tri-state area. and that consequence too, not just, we see the toll every single fight takes on her, but also we just sort of feel in psychological terms where this whole trip has taken her and how much her is even left behind in the past.
It's funny, there was Phil and Matt sometimes put just thoughts or themes up on their whiteboard as they're working. And one of the index cards said, Aaron Bell, who is the main character played by Nicole Kidman, Aaron Bell suffers not because she is amoral, but because she is moral. And I don't think we get an opportunity to really grapple with what it means to be a moral person who makes mistakes. And that's a big part of what I think the movie is about, the cost of making mistakes when you understand the difference between right and wrong.
We talked about the film in thematic terms. Let's do the old-fashioned, what's the movie about conversation? Who wants to step up and do that one?
I'd be glad to.
Go ahead, Phil.
The movie's about a detective, a LAPD detective, Erin Bell, played by Nicole Kidman, who we encounter her in the present day, and the kind of when she was a young cop, she was put on this undercover mission assignment with this desert gang out in Palm Desert. And that, as the movie goes on, we learn the toll that that kind of assignment gone horribly wrong has taken on her. And the kind of leader of that kind of desert gang has reemerged. And so the story is her kind of odyssey across Los Angeles and kind of through the remaining members of that gang to kind of and also into her own past and into what has led her here to this point.
And one of the things I made note of and stuck with me because it reminded me of something that Martin Scorsese once said about having comic actors in dramatic roles, that they really give these things the spice that you're looking for. You talked about that in the context of casting Albert Brooks, which people forget, in Taxi Driver, just having what somebody can do in that kind of situation. And I mentioned to you guys that there are a number of actors we think of in comedic terms in this film. Mm-hmm. And I was really sort of because they give this also a kind of a shape. And so it doesn't just feel like character actors knocking things off. But
yeah, I think, I mean, particularly Bradley Whitford's role, it's such a pungent scene because he brought so much energy and spontaneity and that sense of every time it would be a little bit different. It would be the punch would come a little differently, you know, depending on how he was feeling in the moment. And of course, he's a Juilliard trained actor, but he just can be so funny that it brought a lot of energy to the scene.
Yeah, and James Jordan is in another pungent scene. I like that word. And he it's pretty dark, and yet there are laughs within it. And I think having actors that understand that sometimes the bit of humor creeps into the darkest place, or it's how you deal with something that is so unimaginable. When they understand that, it kind of brings this great specificity and life to it.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting when you put together, and also like someone like Tatiana Maslany, who people are well aware that she's one of our greatest acting geniuses, but people are not necessarily as aware that she came up in comedy in many ways. And you know, just the alive. I think what Karin said, with the actors that we really respond to, and we felt like in this film, we got to work with so many of them, are just very alive and very open to these characters, and really kind of really inhabiting them with putting so much life into them, and finding those moments of humor in these very dark moments, and finding the empathy, most importantly. I mean, that was, you know, there's some pretty rough characters in this doing pretty rough things, but we're always most concerned with finding where there can be empathy and where we can understand who these people are.
Mm-hmm. There's also, in this way that we want from genre films, there's a vividness in having these actors sort of step up from the camera and claim that space while it's happening, because it keeps the movie alive, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I think, I mean, every time Nicole walked on set, there was the sense that she was claiming part of the power of her character and the power of her performance is that she's taking up a lot of space. She's arriving into the space and really, you know, it lives in her clutches. And so all those actors around her were in a kind of, I don't know, I want to say like this communion where they were really taking up the space and enjoying it. And it was fun to see actors just keep topping each other. It was really fun.
Yeah, and also on a technical level, Nicole's character chooses her words carefully. And so she's not the one kind of gabbing at you nonstop and telling you how it is. And so she's kind of watchful and chooses her spots. And so it's the other characters who get that opportunity to talk at her or to tell her how it's going to be, or, you know, and it's just her choosing her spots. But it's an opportunity for those actors to come in and, yeah, like you said, claim the space.
Mm-hmm. And kind of interact with her gravity. Like that's the word that keeps coming back to me when I think about the experience of making the movie and Nicole in it. Her, as Karin said, on set, she just, as Erin, like that, she was just filled with this kind of very potent force, and that it was a very like kind of like both very buzzing energy, but also very like kind of primordial power mm-hmm. that she was bringing. And I think there's something about the character that's true about. So like when we would all walk into that and also try to protect that, and it was a very very unique and really like kind of moving place to be, because she was Nicole, like her commitment to this person and to this very painful place to be, to be this person was just palpable at all times.
It's the treatment. We're talking about the pleasure of genre films with the makers of a film that breaks the boundaries of genre. The film is Destroyers, directors Karen Kusama, writers Phil A. and Matt Manfredi. But part of what we're talking about, too, is this thing that I feel like is missing, that a lot of filmmakers have tried to supplant the idea of character with action. And so those beats have now been replaced with, like, explosions and fist fights. And the idea of being able to have violence occupy the psychological center of a movie, but also having these actors who kind of revel in the material in the way that something like you see in The Asphalt Jungle, you kind of go, there's an excitement of seeing what's going to happen from scene to scene that I think genre movies have lost sight of.
It's funny. It's like, for me, if I watch Dog Day Afternoon again, which I feel I need to do somewhat religiously in the context of this film, you know, one is struck by how much of a character study, how much of a relationship study of a film it is. But really, it's about a bank heist just gone so horribly wrong and kind of claustrophobically wrong. And yet, really, it's a little theater piece inside that bank. And yet, the tension of it and the sense of layers that emerge, that comes from those characters and the storytelling. It's not about the explosions or the violence. It's about the potential for it. And that, I think, is much more interesting to us at this stage.
Yeah. And this may not be a novel observation, but the...
Make
you
it
know,
anyway.
The violence and the explosions and everything you're talking about are more effective when you care about the characters. You know, when they're fully realized and there's a reason why this is happening other than just to insert a set piece. You know.
Well, in this movie particularly, like we knew that there is a centerpiece of action in the movie, and it's so critical to what the movie is, and I think we always speak about it as that it could never be an action movie. It's more like a war movie. That's when action happens in this movie. That was kind of our model. And the idea of it being, it has to be thrilling, you know, but it also has to be terrifying, and it also has to be human. And I think that's how we're trying to approach those things, because it's a crime thriller as well. And those scenes have to pull you in that way. So there's always that balance. But as Matt was saying, it's like, it's these people in these situations that matters, these specific people.
This is a movie with plenty to talk about, so I'm glad its creators are here. We're talking about the film Destroyer, the director, Karen Kusama, and the writers Phil Hay and Matt Manfredi. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's The Treatment. The terrific new film we're talking about is Destroyers. Creators, director Karen Kusama, and writers Phil Hay. Sorry. And Matt Manfredi are here. But one of the things I mentioned that I was struck by, too, in this movie is, as we're talking about violence and the effects it's had on people, that Aaron doesn't know how to have a conversation with anybody, which I was really taken with, too, and want to talk to you guys about that, about Nicole Kidman's reaction to that when she saw that in the material. But that anger that comes out of her all the time, and partially it's so many things, but I want you guys to talk about that, because I thought that was a really fascinating piece of characterization to offer somebody.
Nicole, when she talks about the role, what really struck me, once she had distance from it, because she hates to intellectualize what she's doing while she's doing it, she just wants to be feeling it. But once she was past that, and now that we've had an opportunity for her to investigate her work in the film, she just talks about how shut down the character is, and that the while Aaron Bell feels a lot, she does not have the skill set to interpret those feelings or manage them or communicate them. And that she really, when she looked at the at her career, she felt she had never really played anyone like that before. She's played a lot of feelers, but she hasn't played the person who shuts everything down. And that was, you know, that's an interesting portrait of a woman.
Yeah, I think it plays out. There's a scene with her daughter in this Chinese food restaurant, and her only job is to not get angry. And just to listen to her daughter, and you, it just, she gets poked and poked and poked, and even though she's supposed to, like, you can see that she knows she's supposed to rise above it, but she just fails. Yeah. She can't. And it's like a, you know, it's like a, I think it's a little bit of being a parent in a nutshell. You just have to, you know what I mean? You just have to take it in and remain calm. But yeah, she doesn't have the skills.
And we spoke a lot about how she's, this character is so filled with rage and at many different targets, most deserving. But the kind of most profound rage she has is toward herself. And talking about communication that allows us to build a movie where the ultimate point is finally being able to communicate, because communication means being honest. And actually, that's the thing. This character, this is the reason she can't communicate, because communication, talking, is a way to be exposed and mm-hmm. is so as we learn about this character, we learn there's a reason that she thinks she's protecting something, but like everything else, the more you tamp it down, it has to come out somehow. And mm-hmm. maybe there's one productive way this can come out, and that's what we're trying to find in the movie.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I thought about in that is that so often in movies like this, characters who shouldn't know better are really articulate about why they're so angry, mm-hmm. and often explaining why they're so angry, and she doesn't. And that, yeah. that frustration just sort of bubbles from these ways that really emphasize her helplessness. Mm-hmm. I just thought to be something unusual for her, mm-hmm. because so often she gets to serve up these monologues and that her fists are so often even like balled up by her sides because she can't like get things out. I thought she was responding to this role because it was, I guess, I mean to say a physical role, but also a role about somebody whose physicality comes from the fact that she's often can't get do what she needs to be able to do. She isn't right.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have the right thing to offer in physical action or in conversation. And that's where that almost brittleness, the mm-hmm. physical brittleness of the character comes through.
Well, she, I think for her, I mean, I can't completely speak for her, but Nicole herself has said often that she knew that the role required a literally physical embodiment from the ground up, from the toes up. And that's what excited her about it, that it was someone so incredibly different from her. You know, she's a communicator. She's an empathetic person. She's a talker. She's warm. She's got joy and hope in her. And here we're watching a character who, for the most part, a lot of those qualities have been dampened or even at times snuffed out. And so I think she was attracted to the physical challenge of holding all of that in. And you see it in the performance. You know, she walks around like she's carrying a lot on her back. And part of the movie is to unpack that and figure out what all that weight is.
And I think some of the, for me, the most, you know, moving, so much moves me about Nicole's performance in the movie as just someone watching it. And the fact that it does this character, I feel so much empathy for this character who many would say is not relatable or who is, you know, very challenging in her demeanor, but I think she's fascinating and she's mesmerizing. And I think Nicole really bottles that. The character is such a bottled up character, and that's in some ways her power. Like, she's got all this potential energy that explodes out of her, but it's really destroying her inside. Mm-hmm. And I think that in the climactic scene that she shares with her daughter, where she actually does make a breakthrough, and it's to me watching a character who struggles so much with speaking and being honest, and especially being vulnerable, and especially being wrong, to let that all come together, and to watch how a character who is not good at feeling and doing those things finally do it is very moving, as opposed to a character who is very
always feeling and very always good adjusted at feeling and always and balanced. Exactly. And yeah.
We're talking about lack of communication, the movie that's very good about communicating. The film is Destroyer. It's creators, director Karen Kusama and writers Phil Hay. Sorry, didn't emphasize the Hay there. And Matt Manfredi here to talk about it. But I think that what I like about this movie too is that, and it's a weird thing to say, but we should talk about this, address this a little bit here, is that had this been a part written for a guy, that this movie would have been made right away. Mm. And the idea of seeing these things turned on its head by having and not just having a woman in this role, but also the kinds of things that an action hero doesn't get. I mean, at some point, no matter, as I was saying, how inarticulate or inexpressive this character should be, there gets to be almost like a pin spot scene where the character looks off into the middle distance
right.
at a bar maybe mm-hmm. or, and explains to somebody, I know what I'm feeling, but I just can't be there. And I'm not smart enough to be able to say this. But
here goes.
Yes, exactly. But I'm going to say it anyway. Please don't offer me any roles. I'm too busy to work. But fighting, again, that's why I was saying to you guys before, and I'm glad you came by to talk about this, is so much of this is about responding to what have been almost tropes that take us out of these movies. And there's this kind of headlong momentum the movie has, because at no point do you get in the way of it by stopping it to deliver one of these tropes.
You know, the goal was never to just transplant a woman into a man's role. It was to have this fully fleshed out character in this mm-hmm. type of movie that we love. And I think, I don't know, there are things that we got to explore that I don't think would be explored if it were a man, like the mm-hmm. like the concept of being a bad parent, which if it was a guy, you would think it'd be like, oh, that's just part of the job. Mm-hmm. And with a woman, there's so much judgment.
So now you're doing the voice too.
Yeah, I like it. It's a remarkable transformation.
The voice work. Karin started it with a brilliant Gloria.
But I think there's also a lot of underpinnings of, like, just there's dynamics at play that even if they aren't stated, I don't think Bradley Whitford talks to a male cop that way. Mm-mm. I don't think, mm-hmm. You know, the character Bradley Whitford plays. He's lovely with the officers of the law in person, but
even going back to Toby Huss, who basically talks to her in a way that really is about him having no respect for her.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. There's a lot of pity and judgment and kind of talking at her, mm-hmm. and her power, I think, is just, even though it beats her down, she just absorbs it, and watches and picks her spot and. Yeah, I mean, so, the goal was to, I don't know, it was to not to do those tropes.
I guess. And find the authenticity in it, because I think it's true that, you know, there's a reason that there's certain things that happen in crime movies that mm-hmm. we look forward to, and I think and we have those. And so, as you say, it's our response to those things, and what invigorates it and changes it for us was when we figured out who Erin was, and we figured out her relationship with her daughter. And as Matt was saying, just the making her authentically herself and authentically a specific woman living in a society that is a misogynistic society, mm-hmm. in a society where, you know, if you're talking about a trope of a rogue cop, if it's a man, the assumption everyone's giving this character a hard time, but there's a tincture of respect and even admiration underneath mm-hmm. all the people complaining about
them.
Because
he's an outlaw, but he's a bad boy.
Exactly. Yeah. And in the case of a woman, it requires you to ask the question, is this disrespect? This is a different kind of disrespect that she's facing and has had to surmount or has had to interact with. So it definitely, you know, it's at the top of our minds. And I think Karin was interviewed by Christopher Nolan after her DGA screening, and he said something so insightful that I would like to repeat it here, which was saying that male characters that resemble this one can often be romanticized. The transgression of their lives can be romanticized. And in this case, her transgressions are not romanticized. And that is also something that's gendered a little bit too, I think, mm-hmm. That's what we're kind of after, is to not romanticize those, that kind of transgressive cop outside the lines, you know, framework, because we find her to be, she's in that story in some ways, but she is completely her own person in that.
But I wanted to get back to that idea of confidence, because so often in film noir, and since you guys brought this up, even though we've been talking about the entire time, but that idea of for the, if it's a male figure, that idea of not being able to sort of bring together the heart and the head.
Mm.
And that's romanticized. That's what really is romanticized, that mm-hmm. idea of not being able to find that balance of wholeness.
Yes. And you're bringing something up that actually I would say is a theme in some way through all of my films for myself. And it really was very profoundly so in Girl Fight, my first film, which is, and I think very much in this film too, and the two are related in this strange way, in that we're watching two characters with a lot of fury, trying to find a place to put that fury, trying to manage those feelings, and in doing so, trying to quite simply live in their body, like accept their existence here on Earth. And I feel like years and years and years ago, I talked to you about Girl Fight and about this very simple trajectory of a woman landing in her own body and standing in her own 2 feet. And I kind of feel like that's related to what this story is about on a very elemental level, her feeling her aliveness, her physical self, her humanity, and facing it.
Yeah, because that's the idea of bringing that thematic heft to the film noir.
Mm-hmm.
And then that so often in these movies, in your films, there's this question of competence mm-hmm. that is dismissive rather than actually judging the person standing in front of them. And, mm-hmm. and for her, it becomes this interesting thing because so much of noir is also about having an unreliable narrator.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
So we're constantly asking ourselves, is she competent?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I also think that we're trying to take the pleasures of the genre, which are so, there's so many pleasures mm-hmm. to this, to film noir, to the detective story, to cop movies, mm-hmm. to specifically LA cop movies mm-hmm. that we are inspired by. And, but at the same time, we want to invest it with something a little bit different, invest it with a different type of personal struggle within that. And it goes to the other characters as well, trying to invest them with their bits of humanity that we might rush past in another movie. Like, we want to stay with those pieces of humanity and mm-hmm. put them together. That's what we're hoping to do.
Mm-hmm. We could talk about this movie forever, but we're out of time. Mm-hmm. They only give me so much time to do this show, so I can't thank you guys enough for coming by. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Well, the film you should see that we're talking about is Historia. Its directors, Karen Kusama, its writers are Philip Hay and Matt Manfredi. The show is recorded at NPR West by Leo DeLagula. It's mixed by Kat Yor, edited by Blake Veit, who's associate producer. And by the way, I'm the one who gets to make the non-novel observations on this show. It's the treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.